From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 30th day of August 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. The state statisticians will join us to take a look at crop progress in each of their regions. And we'll hear all about a new startup called Descartes Labs that's using satellite technology and big data to predict the size of U.S. corn and soybean crops. As we close out our half hour together, we'll talk with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the agricultural weather forecast, and it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers from Chicago at the CME Group on this Tuesday afternoon. Settlement prices, September contract in the corn pit, 7 3/4 lower at $3.04. December down a nickel at $3.15 3/4. The March 5 1/4 lower at $3.25 3/4. July corn 4 1/2 lower. December of next year down 4. September soybeans 17 3/4 lower at $9.65 1/2. November 13 1/2 lower at $9.50 3/4. January down 13 1/4, $9.53 1/2. The settlement price, the March down 13 1/4, May down 12 3/4, next year's November down 9 1/2 cents, bean oil off 8 cents, bean meal down $5.70. Soft red winter wheat finished the July down 6 1/2 cents at $4.38 1/4, the hard red at $4.34 1/2 in the July, down 5 1/4. Live cattle futures in the August contract 85 cents higher at $111.60 per 100 pounds, October at $107.65 up to $57.50. Feeder cattle September contract at $142.72 1/2, $3.57 1/2 cents higher, and the October lean hogs at $62 even, up 62 1/2 cents. Here now to take a look at these numbers is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Looks like soybeans led futures lower. What happened there?
Well, the goal of the market is to stimulate exports, and that's what they were doing today, I think. It's the end of the month, and we've got a lot of beans that are just getting ready, and some of the first ones, we've heard the early beans in our area coming in between 65 and 70 bushels to the acre, and the yields are good. I think that that, along with the first notice day coming up tomorrow, the weather continuing to stay good, and if you looked at the crop ratings, it's the big states, the I states, that sort of improved on their crop ratings rather than went down, and we actually saw some improvement there. And we went through some technical points, and along with all those things together, why down we went.
What's the downside objective, in your opinion, at this time?
Well, you know, as we look at things, we should be seeing some support here in at these levels. I mean, 950 was sort of the place we thought they would go to right now. I think that we're going to sit back, see. I don't think there'll be any deliveries in the beans because we are wanting to get some to the export business here right now. We're hoping that tonight or tomorrow we'll get an announcement out of the Chinese in Indianapolis. They're supposed to sit down and write a framing contract for some big purchases, and that maybe we can see a bounce out of these levels.
And what about in the corn market?
The corn market, we took that 322 out. We made a new contract low. We went down here. We've got people that are saying 310, 35, 295, 285 that we could go to. So we're thinking that probably we're in a trading range here, and we're probably not on the low of it quite yet. If the corn yields turn out like the bean yields have been turning out here, we're going to see some pressure on this market. I think we're already seeing probably basis levels drop down as far as fall bids go. There's a little bit of premium for quick shipment, but as we go on out, we're seeing a lot of 35 to 40 under corn bids.
Is this just into the season and seasonal into the harvest at this point? Is there really that much downside, do you think, left?
You know, we'd like to say not. We don't know how much is left in storage and how much room the farmer has. At these levels, I think the farmer is going to be—he's going to store everything he can, because in a lot of cases, unless they've done a lot of good contracting, this is selling at a loss at these levels. And I think he's going to be a very stubborn seller. But there's going to be, if we have the crop out there that the USDA is projecting, you know, the 170 plus type crop, there's going to be a lot of grain that does still have to come to market. And I think that unfortunately it's going to come at cheap, wide basis levels.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us today.
All righty. Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, there are a whole bunch of folks that are trying to use satellite imagery to predict the size of crops around the planet. One of them is Descartes Lab out of Los Alamos, New Mexico. We're now joined by the CEO and co-founder of the lab, Mark Johnson. Thanks, Mark, for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about Descartes?
Sure. Descartes Labs is a Los Alamos, New Mexico-based startup. The original scientists on the team were all members of Los Alamos National Laboratory, where, of course, that's where the Manhattan Project was. And our goal is to advance the science of forecasting by looking at really large data sets and trying to predict things based on those data sets. We started off looking at a huge amount of satellite data and weather data. And with that, we've made global commodity crop predictions, starting off in the U.S. with corn. And one of the cool things about satellite imagery is that you can go look in the past and see what you would have said. So we've created a model that not just tells you what's going on today, but what we would have said in 2008 or 2007. And that model itself has pretty good accuracy. So we're at every point in the growing season, we're more frequent. We have a weekly release on the website. We're more granular, so we look all the way down to the county level since it's a bottoms-up model. And we're more accurate every point in the growing season. So if you look at this back test, on average, we're more accurate than the USDA predictions during the entire growing season.
So right now, you're predicting that the size of the corn crop in the United States will average 171.1 bushels to the acre. Do you have a total production figure, too, that you will be releasing at some point?
We're focusing at least to the external model on the yield. We have a model for paying customers that's even more frequent than the website. So we actually release a model every 2 days, and that includes acreage and production in that also.
And do you do more than just the United States? So, for instance, can you look back and tell us what you might have been predicting for Brazil or Argentina in the past growing season?
Yeah, I mean, already we're starting to look beyond corn and beyond the U.S. So we're testing out a soy model right now. As you know, things are happening in Brazil and Argentina right now. We're going to be looking south right after we do the United States. There's a lot of challenges down there. We have a lot of imagery and weather data down there, but as you know, the numbers coming out of Brazil and Argentina are not nearly as accurate as the ones forecasted by the USDA and the U.S. So, still working through some of those issues, but looks very promising. Applying the techniques that we learned in the U.S. And applying those globally.
How much did your models change in the past week for corn in the U.S.?
It's gone up slightly. So I think our last prediction was 170.4 bushels per acre in the U.S. And we've gone up slightly with this to 171.1. So obviously a lot of really favorable weather across the Corn Belt has positively affected the crops. But we're still coming in below the USDA's prediction. At just slightly over 175, we're pretty confident in this.
Do you think that over time you'll be able to get a prediction, for instance, for the whole of the year earlier in the season? So knowing today what your prediction is as it was released is one thing, but having an idea of the size of the crop, for instance, on August the 1st and being accurate, or, for instance, August the 15th or the 20th or someplace much earlier, would be a far more valuable product to have. Is that something you can see being able to develop?
Absolutely. I mean, save being completely clairvoyant, obviously there's going to be a number of unforeseen events that happen during the growing season. That being said, if we also released a model in 2015 as we were working on the 2016 model, we ran a lot of candidate models. So we looked over 1,000 different models in the 2016 release. And one of the considerable improvements of the 2016 corn model over the 2015 corn model was our ability to accurately predict earlier in the season. So our numbers in the early season, thanks to a lot of work largely on weather modeling, really helped us to get those early season predictions better. So we saw a lot of great gains in this model, and we expect that to continue. Again, you're never going to know everything that's going to happen unless you had a weather forecast that could go months in advance. But, you know, we're pretty confident that we can get highly accurate early in the season.
In the early development of your models, what was the pitfall that tripped you up the most?
You know, I think there's two things I would say. One is that the team is largely comprised of physicists with a few mathematicians and computer scientists thrown in there. So we looked at this with very, very fresh eyes. And one of the things we had to do was sift through all the scientific literature because people have been trying to predict yields from satellite imagery for many years. To sift through that scientific literature is a real challenge because there's a lot of false leads in there, things that are not necessarily predictive of yield at the national level. So kind of separating the scientific literature of what really worked and what didn't was a huge challenge early on. I think the thing that we've done better than anybody else is amass a huge amount of data and build a platform on which you can start to test some of those assumptions. So test some of that science to see what variables matter and what variables don't. It took a considerable amount of work, for example, to clean up the data. So things that you don't think about with satellite imagery, it's very messy. There's clouds over 50% of the United States at any given time. And trying to correct for the atmosphere, to try to correct for clouds, as that is kind of messy data that will affect your model, was really the biggest challenge for us. So we are sitting on 3 petabytes of satellite imagery. And to put that into context, that's 3,000 terabytes, that's 3 million gigabytes. I mean, this is, you know, if you were taking a picture on your phone, you know, every second for the next something like, you know, several dozen years, you might come up with that much imagery. We looked at something like 4 quadrillion pixels. And this all sounds like it's very technical, but the reason you do that is that in order to get extreme levels of accuracy, in order to get down to the county level and eventually the field level to really understand yield, you just need massive amounts of data to A, build a really good model, and then B, consistently throughout the season, update your predictions.
Can I get field level modeling from you?
We do not. We have not released that right now, but we've definitely been doing work at the field level also. You know, our expertise and our goal is really to look at global commodity crop production. So really understanding at the country level what we can do or what's being produced. But our ultimate aim is to make sure that that model is robust such that it's a true bottoms-up model that at the lowest level of granularity, that is the field, you have enough accuracy, and that builds up into a larger model. That's the ultimate vision of where we'd like to go. But you know what makes us a bit unique here is our global focus and looking at countries, especially those countries where they're much less understood. In some sense, we picked the U.S. first because the data is so good out there, and you can verify your numbers. But I think the real opportunity in terms of what we can do with our models is look to those places like China, like Brazil and Argentina, like the Black Sea region, where the numbers just aren't as solid as they are here.
And finally, what kind of cost on the plans do you have, and do you expect to leave some of the information available for free on the website?
Yeah, we continue. I think it's really important for us to share this information. You know, our cadence is so regular that we felt like it was important to get this in the hands of farmers and traders. You know, pricing, give us a call and we can chat with you. But yeah, we will continue to provide this via the website, via our newsletter, and via our mobile apps to anybody who wants to see those numbers updated on a weekly basis.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today, Mark.
I really appreciate it, too. Thanks for having me.
Mark Johnson is the CEO and co-founder of Descartes Labs. They're out of Los Alamos, New Mexico. You can find them online at descarteslabs.com. Now let's take a look at yesterday afternoon's USDA Weekly Crop Progress Report. It shows that around the nation, 92% of the corn crop has now entered the dough stage. The five-year rolling average is 87%. 60% of the crop has dented. The five-year average is 50%. 9% of the corn crop in the nation has matured. 11% is the rolling five-year average. It's said to be in 54% good and 21% excellent. That's the same as the previous week. Soybean setting pods now at 98%. The rolling five-year average is 92%. Dropping leaves at 2%. And the rolling five-year average is nil, so just ahead of the rolling five-year average. The condition of the soybean crop, 15% good, 18% excellent. That's slightly better than the previous week of 54% good and 18% excellent. Now, here are the state statisticians with updates from their regions.
This is Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Region. Above normal precipitation resulted in just 4.1 days suitable for field work across Iowa during the week ending August 28, 2016. Ponding and flooding of some fields were reported in the northern two-thirds of Iowa. 94% of the corn crop reached the dough stage or beyond. That's 8 days ahead of the five-year average, with 65% dented or beyond, and that's 5 days ahead of both last year and normal. Corn was starting to mature, most notably in the southern third of the state. Corn crop condition was rated with 83% good to excellent, despite some reports of crop damage from heavy rains and wind during the week. Soybean setting pods reached 96%. That's 4 days ahead of last year. 13% of the soybeans have started to turn color, 3 days ahead of last year's pace. The soybean crop condition was rated with 82% good to excellent, although there were reports of sudden death and white mold in some soybean fields. Pasture condition rated 64% good to excellent, and livestock conditions were normal, although higher insect numbers and muddy feedlots were reported in some areas of the state. That's the Iowa Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending August 28, 2016. I'm Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Most of Illinois had above-average rainfall last week, but southern areas received less than normal rainfall. Overall, the state received an average of 1.31 inches of rain, which was more than 1/2 inch above normal. Temperatures averaged 74.5 degrees, nearly 1 degree above normal. Topsoil moisture is now rated 1% very short, 2% short, 75% adequate, and 22% surplus. There was an average of 3.8 days suitable for fieldwork last week across the state. 68% of corn acres are now in the dent stage or beyond, compared to 68% 1 year ago and 66% for the five-year average. 7% of acres are now mature, compared to 16% normally. The condition of the corn crop improved slightly and is now rated 3% very poor to poor, 12% fair, and 85% good to excellent. Soybeans are setting pods on 94% of acres, equal to the five-year average. 7% of acres are now turning color, compared to 11% for the five-year average. The condition of the soybean crop is now rated 6% very poor to poor, 16% fair, and 78% good to excellent, nearly the same as 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region. Periodic rainfall kept field conditions fairly damp, limiting Minnesota farmers to 4.3 days suitable for fieldwork. The wet conditions continued to be a challenge for harvesting of small grains and hay in some areas. There were some reports of disease in soybeans, particularly across southern Minnesota. 58% of the corn acreage was in or beyond the dent stage, 6 days ahead of the five-year average. Corn crop condition was rated with 85% good to excellent. 12% of the soybeans were turning color, 2 days ahead of the average, and 5 days behind last year. Soybean crop condition was rated 80% good to excellent. That is the Minnesota Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending August 28, 2016. I'm Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address there is willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural information, including Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. That's posted by about 5 o'clock on each and every Thursday afternoon. Back in just a couple of minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Let's start in the Atlantic Ocean. I've been mentioning, mostly because you all tell me this, that it's hurricane season, and we're really in the midst of it, and there are a whole bunch of things that are happening. Can you tell me about the weather and the impact that this might have over time this fall?
Well, I think there could be some pretty significant impacts coming in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And this is going to be in the areas of the United States that you would expect, the Gulf Coast, Texas, to Florida, and then the whole eastern seaboard and mid-Atlantic as well. We have a very warm Atlantic basin, water temperatures in the Atlantic basin and also the Gulf of Mexico. Water temperatures are warm. And the upper-level wind patterns are really favorable for hurricane and tropical storm formation. We're going to see this week in Florida and along the North Carolina coast with a couple of tropical depressions that may reach weak hurricane status. And then long-range charts are projecting one wave after another coming off Africa, moving west across the southern Atlantic. And so this is going to impact the southeast and east coast of the United States, whether or not we end up with a major hurricane. Don't know that yet, but certainly it's going to be gathering a lot of news headlines in the coming weeks.
So something to keep an eye on. Now, tell me about the forecast for the Midwest over the next week.
Okay, over the next week, we're going to be looking at a weather pattern that's going to be not unlike what we saw during most of the month of August, which means about every 3 or 4 days, something coming through producing some scattered showers and thunderstorms. But I think one thing that we'll definitely be noticing is some late summer heat, Todd. Temperature readings all across the middle and eastern half of the United States as we get into the first 10 days of September could be quite warm. The first week, we could be looking at above normal temperatures. Now, there will be some rainfall with those showers and thunderstorms coming on through, but I think we're going to notice the heat the most.
All right. Anything else we ought to discuss around the world?
Well, around the world, we're seeing a typical late August, early September pattern developing, which means an increase in this tropical activity. But if you go to the key growing areas of China, portions of Europe, there's really nothing sticking out as major factors at the moment.
We'll check in with you again next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget that you can get most of our programming as podcast either through iTunes or the Google Play Store. It doesn't matter which one. You can also check us out online at willag.org, willag.org, and just listen there. However you listen, we appreciate that you do. Do take time to drop us a note if you'd like. The phone number is 217-333-9697, or you can email me directly at tgleason@illinois.edu. That's T-G-L-E-A-S-O-N at Illinois spelled out .edu. The EDU stands for education. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.